Get ready to hear the truth about America on a show that's not immune to the facts with your host, Dan Bongino.
Yeah, man, we're here. It's our first primetime special. This is like, you know, I'm used to the day shows with you, but I got to tell you, folks, I'm more of kind of a night owl. I mean, not a night owl like I go to bed at like midnight or so. I go to sleep like 8:30, but I'm usually at peak energy at night. You're like peak energy at night. We got to deal with you in the morning. That's not peak energy sometimes. Some polls are already closing. Virginia, look at this, too close to call. Super Tuesday live. I got Mike Benz coming up for you in a minute. I was just chatting with him before the show. I got a treat for you with this cat. This guy is awesome. He knows these CIA PSYOP things up and down. Big show. We'll be covering the results as they come in. Thank you for being here. Show just started. We've already got an amazing crowd. You guys are great. We got sponsors who pay to be here. We really appreciate it. Hey, financial experts thought we were in the clear. They were anticipating around 6 rate cuts by the Fed this year, and then the inflation data came out higher than expected. Listen, inflation's not going away. It can't. The U.S. is $34 trillion in the hole, and we keep printing money. It's pushing the prices up every single day. You can either bury your head in the sand or do something about it. Diversify a portion of your savings into gold with Birch Gold Group. Gold is your hedge against inflation, and Birch Gold makes it super easy to own. I've been a customer of theirs for a while. They help you convert an existing IRA or 401k to a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and you don't pay a penny out of pocket. Gold is a part of my savings strategy. I buy from Birch Gold. You can too. Text DAN to 989898. Get your free information kit on gold. Then talk to a precious metal specialist on how to protect your savings from persistent inflation with gold. Text DAN to 989898 now. Performance may vary. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision. Message and data rates apply. Thank you, Birch Gold. We appreciate it. And my posse over at Brick House Nutrition, they said, we want to sponsor that Super Tuesday show. Show them some love. My favorite product. You know, I'm into health and fitness so much so I even dressed up for the show tonight. What are you laughing at? Field of Greens. I take Field of Greens twice a day. I love it. I had some in green tea today. Then I put a little bit in some orange juice and water afterwards. It's delicious. It is a ground up, healthy, wholesome fruit and vegetable powder. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen by their team to help support your health. If I showed you my blood work at 49 from Field of Greens, you'd be like, this guy's not messing around. This stuff is the real deal. I promise you're going to love the product. For any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Can't beat that. Try Field of Greens today. Look at the back. Look at the label. You're going to love it. I got you 15% off your first order plus free rush shipping. Go to brickhousenutrition.com/Dan. Use promo code Dan. That's promo code Dan at brickhousenutrition.com/Dan. brickhousenutrition.com/Dan. Love that stuff. Field of Greens. All right. I'd say, Producer Joe, let's go. We got our friend Mike Benz here. I want to welcome Mike Benz to the show. You know him. You've seen him on the Tucker Carlson show all over the internet. But as I said to Mike pre-show here, Mike is not new to this stuff. If you follow social media, Mike Benz has been producing amazing content on social media and warning people about some of these pending apocalypses with election interference for a long time. Mike, welcome to the show. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks, Dan. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So, you know, we were kind of joking around before the show, but you've been doing this for a while. You appear on Tucker Carlson's show. Tucker is a massive platform. And you expose kind of start to finish the massive operation that's been going on for a long time about the blob. I think that I hate the term the deep state. I don't know if you agree, yeah. Mike, because they're not all state actors. So maybe that's a right. good place to start. You know, what exactly is the blob and how are they altering electoral politics in the United States and elsewhere?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the blob is not my term. That's actually a term that came from Obama's Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes in the second half of the Obama term, when there started to be pushback from the substructures underneath Obama within the permanent Washington and its outer rim in the private sector, where he referred to the foreign policy establishment as being the blob. That is, what Obama wanted to do domestically, he could basically do, but anything on foreign policy had to get the permission of this, you know, alien. It, you know, gets its name from the 1950s movie, The Blob, of this sort of amorphous, right. invincible, swallow you whole, semi-mindless but indestructible force that just can't be stopped. And what it really refers to is the foreign policy establishment. And I'll break down more specifically those component parts. But what we're really talking about here are the managers of the American empire, which are a distinct group from the citizens of the American homeland. You know, we all who are concerned about the welfare of what's happening in our town or our state or our city, think of the American homeland as being America. But, you know, we have been an empire, an overseas empire, since, you know, at least 1898. You can argue even in the early 1800s with Monroe Doctrine, you know, we have relied on our control of foreign territories and our manipulation of foreign political systems to be able to get our sugar, our wheat, our agricultural crops, our oil, our gas, our lithium, our uranium, our, you know, cobalt, you name it. Every plot of dirt has an asset hidden within it that can be useful to the American people if it can be exploited or if it can be traded. And the people who are responsible for doing that are our foreign policy establishment. Now, those within the government are housed within three principal agencies. I'm sort of using that agency loosely because it's the State Department, the Defense Department, and the intelligence community. So often, you know, I'll say CIA, but I'm really referring to the whole intelligence community. And you can think of that as being defense, diplomacy, and intelligence. And these three things move as one through the interagency process of the government every single time. So anytime you see the CIA taking an action in a particular territory, that means that the CIA's action is being synchronized with the State Department and the Pentagon. If the State Department is operating in a region, that means the CIA and the Pentagon are being synced as well. And same thing when you see the Pentagon taking action, there's always going to be a role of the State Department for diplomacy and for economic soft power projection and for the intelligence community to do the plausibly deniable dirty work that can't be officially attributed to the U.S. military. And so these three sort of houses within the federal government constitute that sort of inner sphere of the blob. And the outer rim of it are the donors and drafters on the outside who sort of draft off the battering ram of the foreign policy establishment's activity. So our oil and gas companies are highly reliant, for example, on the Pentagon or the State Department or the CIA in order to militarily control or engage in diplomatic relations or to overthrow the government of a particular country where we need oil and gas. Same thing with you know, copper, aluminum, every material. We have U.S. national champions. The issue is sometime by the 1990s in this country, there began to be a serious divide between the economic interests of the managers of the empire and the citizens of the homeland. And there is now essentially a kind of occupation by the empire managers where they're not letting the citizens of the homeland vote their way out into a different foreign policy.
So, Mike, is this where, you know, it is Super Tuesday. We're watching the results. Looks like we got something coming in from Virginia here. Less than 1% of the vote, so that doesn't mean anything, especially with Virginia. You don't know if that's from Northern Virginia or Southern Virginia. Might as well be two separate states. So we'll keep our eye on this, Mike and I, for the remainder of this hour and forever long we're here. But Mike, that blob, the blob, in my time running for office, I learned a lot. I think I obviously lost, and I'm glad I did it. But it's amazing how when you run, and the first race I wasn't competitive, so nobody really bothered with me. I won the Republican primary in Maryland, but nobody gave a damn for the Senate because they knew I was going to get blown out. But the second race where I ran for Congress, we only lost by a point. And in about the last month or so, everybody started to say, like, wait, this guy could win this race. Like, this is bananas over here. And it was interesting how many people came out of the woodwork. You know, all kinds of different lobbyists, people who suggest, oh, you need to meet this guy. You need to meet this retired general. And when you're new at this, you don't realize you're getting kind of, I hate the word because it's got the, you know, but you're getting groomed for somebody.
Yeah,
I did not plan this with them. You knew exactly where I was going with this. You're getting groomed for something. You, as a guy who's studied this forever, I'm not crazy when I tell my audiences, right? Like, this is why Trump is such a threat to them, because these little political groomers, he doesn't need these guys. He doesn't need the name ID. He doesn't need the money. He doesn't need any of it.
No, and I sent you a link before the show of how even folks like Mitt Romney, for example, went through that grooming process when they were running for president. You know, the Kofor Black, who spent 30 years at the CIA and won Distinguished Medal Award. He was a Republican CIA, you know, titan for decades. That's right. In the Bush and Cheney era. And, you know, Kofor Black was, you know, the Daily Beast even describes him as being Mitt Romney's sort of Sherpa and envoy to have the intelligence community bless Mitt Romney's run for president. Now, Kofor Black happened to have sat on the board of a tiny little natural gas company in Ukraine known as Burisma. And Mitt Romney himself was on the board of the International Republican Institute, which was created as a CIA cutout in 1983, while Hunter Biden was sitting on the chairman's advisory board of the National Democratic Institute, which was a Democrat CIA cutout. So you had both Kofor Black, this sort of groomer of politicians into the world of intelligence to make sure that they were on board with the intelligence consensus. And then you had Hunter Biden, whose dad was vice president running the Ukraine portfolio and spent 30 years on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, basically overseeing foreign relations in the Senate. So you had basically the Democrat side of the CIA and the Republican side of the CIA in a consensus to build up this tiny little Ukrainian gas company and reap the spoils of that.
Yeah, my guys put up on the screen, Guy has editorial control. That's an Eli Lake article. Meet Mitt Romney's trusted envoy to the dark side, Kofor Black. So, Mike, what I'm taking from your information here, too, though, is it's not just that Trump is a threat to the Democrats, the liberals and the radical left, but Trump is, in fact, a threat in a bipartisan matter, a matter to what is a bipartisan blob. This is not, for as much as I can't stand the Democrats, you can speak for yourself or not, but, and I really can't. I mean, the liberals, I abhor everything they stand for. This is a bipartisan mess. When you talk about the swamp, the Democrats don't own this alone.
Completely. This is this foreign policy consensus has existed from Truman until Trump. And just to sort of put the bow on what we were talking about the blob and with this sort of bipartisan blob structure, if your producer can pull up the top of my Twitter page right now, you'll see a quote from Victoria Nuland's husband, Robert Kagan. And this quote really ties it together. He made this in Brookings 1 week before the 2020 election. If you put it up on screen, I have it memorized, so it's okay. But he writes, and again, this is Victoria Nuland's husband writing in a Brookings article about advice for the next president. And his advice is threefold. Respect the blob, learn from the blob, love the blob. Those are the exact words. If you just scroll down, you'll see I have it highlighted there. These are the literal words. So again, I did not make this term up. The blob lovingly refers to itself as the indestructible blob. And again, this was 1 week before the 2020 election. And this was his counsel both to Joe Biden and to Donald Trump, should he essentially seek, to have a term where he was not under the constant assault of an FBI special prosecutor or the CIA and Pentagon, as what happened with the 2019 Ukraine impeachment. Remember, those were the Vindmans and Eric Ciamarella. Yeah. That was a joint CIA-Pentagon driven impeachment around Trump's Ukraine policy. And this sort of gets to the greater stakes of Ukraine, but it's absolutely a bipartisan thing. You can argue that it's what's kept peace in Washington is that both parties have gotten spoils. And this is why CIA cutouts like the National Endowment for Democracy have wings for both parties. I mentioned the International Republican Institute, which was run for 25 years by John McCain, who ran for president in 2008 after George Bush, whose father was the CIA director before he became president. So you had the guy who ran it was a guy whose dad was the CIA director. The next Republican candidate ran at its outset when it was created in 1983, the Republican wing of the CIA's top cutout. And then the next GOP candidate, Mitt Romney, was on the board of the IRI, of the GOP's CIA cutout. So you have this grooming process, essentially, to make sure that you are vetted by the intelligence community every step of the way. But the fact is the National Endowment for Democracy has both of those units. It's got the IRI for Republicans, but it's got the National Democratic Institute for Democrats, so that when the CIA moves in a region, when the State Department and the Pentagon move in a region, spoils, fall to both sides of the aisle. There's really only one other time in U.S. history where there was this foreign policy conflict. I mean, this is an old saying in Washington that politics stops at the water's edge, which is intended to say we may disagree at home, but we're never going to disagree on the world stage. But what that effectively means is, we might disagree on tax policy, but we're never going to disagree about whether or not we're going to invade Ukraine. you know, or whether going to invade Russia, or whether we're going to, you know, do NATO enlargement or something. Those things become depoliticized by payoffs to both sides of the political aisle. The problem was, is when a populist knocked out both the Bush dynasty and the Clinton dynasty in one blow, there was no immune system immediately in place to be able to stop that person's rise from office, because traditionally that role would fall to the press. But now there was a substitute press in the form of a free and open internet, and that basically allowed hearts and minds to continue to stay strong. And so they've had to turn to prosecutors, first with the Russiagate, and now with Trump facing 700 years and 91 different felony indictments.
Mike, that's so important what you just said, because I think a lot of people who are old school establishment Republican, establishmentarian Republicans from the past, but maybe aren't as read in on the process as you are, they don't understand that the threat to Trump was not about policy. When you look back at it, listen, I'm a conservative, period, dispositive statement, forget it, stop it right there, okay? I'm a conservative Republican. But Donald Trump's agenda during the first 4 years was a relatively mainstream Republican agenda. Tax cuts, regulatory reform. I mean, there were some bold things, the movement on the foreign policy front and the Abraham Accords and the embassy back to Jerusalem. But it really was, it was nothing really dramatic. Except I don't want to make it out like it wasn't. It was a good agenda, but it wasn't anything crazy. It wasn't like we ripped the Department of Education to pieces and none of that stuff happened. The objections to Trump were what you just said was the mercenary money making behavior of people who profited off the blob's interference in foreign countries and elsewhere, where there was a bipartisan consensus and money to be made, was all disrupted because the spoils weren't there for them anymore. All of a sudden, they got this new guy and they're like, well, he doesn't owe me anything and I don't owe him anything. What am I going to do now?
No, that's exactly right. You know, he was the first president in 40 years not to declare a new war. He put an end to the military operations in Syria. He canceled the Iran nuclear deal day one. He basically, you know, focused on domestic priorities instead of foreign policy maximalism. And that unfortunately ran, you know, headlong into an in-process State Department, CIA, Pentagon operation to expand NATO all the way up to the surface of the moon, essentially, to continue this operation in Ukraine, which they were deeply threatened by Trump's So there was a maximum pressure policy on Russia after Crimea in 2014 and a sort of maximum trade policy with Iran. And Trump flipped that, right? Trump basically did maximum pressure on Iran and neutrality with Russia. And that basically totally threatened to rejigger the world energy markets, as had been invested in during the Obama years by many of the, you know, U.S. Chamber of Commerce companies. And, the energy titans, everything from, you know, our major oil and gas companies to the financial investors in that, such as BlackRock, you know, they had all made a giant investment in a military strategy that was hot underway when Trump won office around militarily reconquering eastern Ukraine, which is where all the shale is in Ukraine. You know, the industry. You know, the big cities like Kiev are in the west, but the resources are in the east. You know, there was this plan underway that George Soros personally played no small part in around privatizing the Ukrainian gas market, that is turning it over from Ukrainian state ownership to private ownership of private companies owned by Wall Street in London, prying that off of Ukraine, having it owned by essentially, you know, Soros and a bunch of co-investors, and then killing Gazprom in Russia, killing Russia's exports of energy into Europe, and then basically stealing a $1 trillion market, because Russia was out and now the high-priced U.S. LNG would take its place. Now, that was, for a long time in the 20th century, just good old-fashioned, you know, U.S. diplomacy, you know, making the argument that it would benefit Americans because now we have more export markets, you know, which would mean, you know, more jobs for middle-class Americans. The thing is that doesn't exist anymore. These are multinational companies who, you know, most of their employee base is abroad. You know, we don't have that domestic manufacturing belt anymore. Those spoils were going just to this financial class surrounding the Biden world. such as BlackRock. You know, BlackRock made a huge investment in LNG once the military committed. This is in 2015. Once the military committed to reconquering eastern Ukraine. You know, we overthrew the Ukrainian government in 2014 in a CIA State Department-backed coup. Victoria Nuland, who is the head of the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine there, bragged on tape about giving $5 billion to Ukrainian civil society organizations. Those are Rent-A-Riot organizational NGOs.
Yes.
For groups like the Right Sector to do a January 6th style, if you were to believe the official story, to do a January 6th style, you know, surrounding of the parliament building and running of the democratically elected president out of office. This is what we literally, this is what the State Department and CIA literally orchestrated the moment that democratically elected president of Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych, rejected an IMF, an IMF lobbied trade deal that would have required the mass privatization of all of Ukraine's publicly held assets. So once they rejected that trade deal and went with the Russian one instead, we unleashed our Rent-A-Riots. We unleashed the mob. We had capacity built with $5 billion worth of U.S. taxpayer money. We overthrew that government, and then we were not expecting the counter coup in eastern Ukraine when the Luhansk and Donetsk regions, as well as Crimea, declared themselves breakaway states, not subject to the coup government. And that was really the first time that the Pentagon was caught with its pants down, unprepared for a military confrontation, as it had never even happened during the Cold War. There was no direct military confrontation with Russia. NATO never had to fire a single bullet from 1949 until 1995, when it unilaterally, offensively bombed Yugoslavia for peace. But, you know, this is now a situation where you had the expected recapture of these territories. And so you had tens of billions of dollars of Biden world bucks going into the investment, assuming that we would retake that territory. Chevron signed a $10 billion deal with Naftogaz. Exxon signed a multi-billion dollar deal. Shell in London signed a $10 billion deal with Naftogaz. Halliburton, Dick Cheney's company that he was the chairman of, has all the shale processing rights with the government of Ukraine. They signed that up between 2017 and 2019, all expecting to be able to simply retake this territory. And when Trump ran on a sort of neutrality with Russia type policy and canceled this maximum pressure campaign and redirected on Iran, who the Biden world was looking to open up their oil and gas in order to replace the Russian ones, you know, because they sit on the world's second and third largest oil and gas supplies. It basically reversed this in-process, you know, multi-billion dollar investment from Biden's backers. And so they unleashed on Trump what they have traditionally done to foreign dictators with their very special set of skills, everything ranging from controlling the prosecutors, as they did in Ukraine, you know, famously the Joe Biden, Viktor Shokin situation where he threatened $1 billion of aid being withheld unless they replaced the prosecutor.
And fabricating evidence too, the black ledger.
All of it. And you know, it's in, you know,
Mike, hold on one sec. I just want to check these primary results out of, because these two states are really critical, Vermont and Virginia. Scroll that up on the screen for a second. Nikki Haley's getting trounced, folks. I told you I'd monitor this all over Super Tuesday. I'm enjoying the conversation with Mike a lot more. Donald Trump, it's only 12% of the vote in Virginia. But again, it looks like a rout. If Nikki Haley in a nonpartisan primary state like Virginia and Vermont is going to perform this poorly this early on, and I got double digits of the vote, and she is in a world of trouble. In Vermont, I mean, seriously, this is a really bad night. But Mike, getting back to what you were talking, what's that? I don't know. Who is it? Someone voted. He brings up a good point. Chris Christie got 302 votes in Virginia. Who's voting for Chris Christie? I don't know. I have no idea. Those must be some government lobbyists who hired Chris Christie for their company. So Mike,
can I just make one quick note on this, just because we're going to keep coming back to these numbers?
You know, it's an open show.
This is the first primary in my lifetime that is not actually, you know, typically this is like the All-Star game night. You know, it's like, okay, it's the best showing of the top three or four people. But tonight, this is more like a slam dunk contest. It's in Virginia, is he going to do the spinning 720 backflip and dunk it this way? Or is he going to do it?
It's a Harlem Globetrotters game. You kind of know the outcome. You're just watching to get it. Are you all entertained? It's like a gladiator thing. It reminds me of that scene in Gladiator where the Battle of Carthage, But Maximus wins the fight, and he looks at me and goes, wait, weren't we supposed to win that fight? This is tonight. Like, that's what it is. Well, I'll keep following it, but it looks like it's going to be a rout early on. But this is really important, what you just said about the blob in Ukraine and the financial interests in the petro assets of these countries. Because I think sometimes I get this a lot from listeners. I interact with them probably more than any other host through Rumble and Facebook. I love what they have to say. A lot of them even have my email. And one of the things I think I got wrong early on, and I think some of them may get wrong now, is we really think these people are super sophisticated and smart. And a lot of them, maybe some of them are, maybe they have high IQs like Jake Sullivan, but they're really motivated by two simple things, power and money. And when you look at the Ukraine situation, like you had mentioned Soros, it's a really simple case about what Soros was up to. There were energy assets over there he had a significant financial interest in. So what do? You make specific monetary donations in large enough amounts to groups where you can influence Democrat politics. So what happened? The Ukrainian embassy, which I write about, thank you, this was in my book, The Soros Circle, Follow the Money. What do? Soros winds up funding a couple of NGOs over there. The IRF, the International Resistance Foundation, gives them tons of money. That turns later on into ANTAC, which turns into NABU, an investigative agency in Ukraine, which, unbelievably, Mike, NABU winds up starting the investigation into Donald Trump with the famous black ledger that was basically fabricated in Ukraine. The whole Russia hoax started in Ukraine. The entire thing with this stupid black ledger where they alleged Paul Manafort was getting paid by these Russia-connected parties. But this was all, the lineage of this thing goes back to Soros and his groups. It was a money thing. It was a power play.
Yes, and remember, so I'm just retweeting something to the top of my timeline on X in case the producer wants to bring it up, because there's another amazing data point here around the so-called Red Lines memo that was issued to Zelensky the week after he was elected in 2019. And this is an incredible document. You know, it comes from the Ukraine Crisis Media Center, which is a State Department, hodgepodge of it's an NGO swarm that's basically a bunch of so-called independent media and independent civil society institutions in Ukraine, 60 or 70 of them in all. And it's a combination of U.S. State Department funded. And if you click that link on uacrisis.org, this is a famous letter that was known as the Red Lines letter that referred to all the different red lines not to be crossed. Now, these are all Soros funded or USAID or National Endowment for Democracy funded. These are basically the funds for all of these organizations either come from the U.S. State Department, or the CIA via the pass-through National Endowment for Democracy, or George Soros, who is a part of that donor drafter class of the blob, right? Soros is heavily invested in the Ukraine energy story and privatizing this company called Naftogaz, which is the lion's share of Ukraine's national revenue. In order to do that, he needs the State Department to force the government to take action. So this memo here, you'll see it says, we remain politically neutral, but are deeply concerned about the first executive decisions taken by the newly elected president. Unfortunately, they demonstrate a complete lack. This is the U.S. State Department's NGO swarm and the Soros orgs. And you'll see they actually threaten, there's a line in there where they threaten political instability. That is, that they will unleash the rent-a-riot mobs on Zelensky's new government unless he does the following things. As civil society activists, again, these are not civil society activists. These are CIA cutouts. These are State Department-funded, government-organized, non-governmental organizations. These are gongos. God, these are State Department crazy things.
I've never seen this. This is totally crazy. I've never seen this.
And you'll see the red lines not to be crossed on issue after issue. And if you scroll to the top, you'll actually see what I'm referring to, just to put the button on this, where they refer to, where you can run a control F for political instability. They specifically refer to, yes, exactly, such actions will inevitably lead to political instability. That is, political instability is what got, that's the good trouble they were referring to when they did that, to put Yatsenyuk in office. But you'll scroll down and you'll see Ukraine didn't get any control of that government when Zelensky was in office on security issues, not allowed to basically control their own security, foreign policy, not allowed to control their own foreign policy. They weren't economic issues. National identity. This is the State Department controlling the national identity of Ukraine, attempting to review the language law. This was a law prohibiting the speaking of Russian in the country. Now, put yourself in the shoes of anybody not within the solipsistic, you know, all-seeing eye of the blob here. The language, Ukraine at that time, if you were to treat it as a whole country and not respect the independent breakaway in Crimea or in the Donbass, was half Russian. The entire eastern half of the state spoke Russian, and the coup government, the Kiev government, declared Russian to be illegal as a language. And then the State Department threatened to coup the new government if they allowed the articulation of a language back in their own country. We can return back to that, I guess, after we check in on the slam dunk contest here.
Yeah, it's quick update. Virginia primary. Looks like Trump's going to run away with it. Folks, this is the benefit of tuning into the show. I'm just going to give you the hard reality. A lot of these other programs will be like, stay tuned. We're going to see what's going to forget that. Stay tuned because you like the show. It's now over. If Nikki Haley cannot play in Virginia, which Northern Virginia, by the way, can be very swampy because of a lot of government workers and lobbyists, she can't play anywhere. I'm sorry. This is going to be a really awful night. They apparently already called it. They've only got 30% of the vote in. It's over 64% Trump. We'll see how bad it gets. You know what, Mike, let me take a quick break here. On the other side of the break, I want to ask you about a couple of things. I want to close out this Ukraine collusion, CIA, Soros tie with a simple question for you. I know the audience has too. Why the hell doesn't Zelensky just come clean? So think about that. And second, I want to get into what happens if Trump wins. I see the potential for really unprecedented street chaos. So hold that thought. My last sponsor is here. Appreciate your patience, folks. Thank you for tuning in. Amazing. Do we get, holy shit, 100,000 people tuning in at night. 100,000. Oh, no, we booked the Florida thing again. 100,000 twice. That's twice. 100,000, 225,000 this morning. Love you guys. We're filling up football stadiums. Mike's talking to the entire University of Michigan football stadium. Exposing the blob on election. Sorry, Mike. I get excited.
No, okay. No, it's okay. I mean, I'm talking to, you know, basically one day's worth of new people coming through our southern border. So if we can just pipe this in. No, if we get put a megaphone and turn them, you know, turn them into the fellow populace.
He's our resident fact checker. And he says, fact check, that's absolutely true. I mean, just think about those questions. This is a great show, folks. I'm really enjoying. Thank you so much. You guys are the best. Thank you for showing up. Hey, you having trouble sleeping or staying asleep? I will tonight after this show because now Mike's got me worried about the blob. I never even saw that document before. Is poor sleep negatively impacting your life? You tried other sleep supplements with no success. You know my secret? Beams Dream Powder. I love it. It's a hot cocoa for sleep that could transform your nights. You know me, Dream has been a total game changer. Sleep was my enemy for the longest time. Try Beams Dream Powder. It's a science-backed hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Better sleep's never tasted better. Other sleep aids can cause next day grogginess, not Beams Dream Powder. It's a powerful all-natural blend. And check these products out. They work. Do your research. You'll see this stuff works. Reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. Just mix Beams Dream Powder into hot water or milk and enjoy before bedtime. If you want to try Beam's best-selling dream powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/Bongino and use code Bongino at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/Bongino and use code Bongino for up to 40% off. Our last sponsor, and we'll get right back to Mike. I may need this to relax. The sauna blanket. In these crazy days, we got to recharge and refresh in a natural way. To that end, I use Bone Charge's sauna blanket. They're a holistic wellness brand. They have a wide range of evidence-based products to optimize life in every way. One of my favorites is the sauna blanket. It helps me kind of, ironically, chill out when the day's over. Folks, the benefits of sauna, I don't need to read any kind of scripts for this. Look it up. Dynorphins. Look at the effect on your skin, collagen production, sweating a lot of that garbage out. I am a huge fan of sauna. Again, do your homework. You'll see this is absolutely accurate. Super healthy for you. Great for your health. Good for your heart. Sets up in less than a minute. The sauna blanket heats fast. I relax. I watch TV or so. 30-minute session for me. Kid you not, the sauna blanket from Bone Charge. Absolute game changer. It's great. Give it a shot. Bone Charge ships worldwide. The sauna blanket ships free with no hidden cost. Plus, Bone Charge offers a 30-day free trial. with easy returns or exchanges and a 12-month warranty. Relax, revitalize, and refresh with Bone Charge and the amazing sauna blanket. Check it out. Head to bonecharge.com/Bongino. Use code Bongino to save 15%. That's B-O-N-C-H-A-R-G-E, bonecharge.com/Bongino. And use code Bongino to save 15%. It's over $100 off. Really works. Heats you up pretty good. Check it out. Back to Mike Benz. Again, we'll keep our eye on this. Vermont, a shocker, Joe Biden won in Vermont. He beat Marianne Williamson, who I'm not even sure is even in the race anymore. Virginia called. Vermont will probably be called momentarily. Actually, Haley's not too bad, 54-42. Trump Haley in Vermont. So we'll see how she does up there. But Virginia is just a deal sealer for her campaign. So throw him back up on the screen. I got the thing.
Yeah, and Virginia so also as well. The defense contractors are. And exactly. Nikki Haley went from, basically being totally middle class to being worth $8 million after, she went from
amazing
for Trump to being a Boeing contract.
Well, I wonder how Boeing, that happens. So. I'm sure they were paying for her engineering skills, with the Bernoulli effect and all that. So she's probably very familiar with. A kinetic energy and potential energy and all that physics stuff. They're all geniuses. Pelosi too. But Mike, back to Ukraine. I it's a topic that fascinates me. Again, I wrote about this in this chapter of my book against the advice of a number of people who said, I don't think people want to hear about Ukraine. I said, no, I think they do. Why do you think Zelensky, who's looking at the same poll numbers, he's watching tonight. He's got to know every swing state poll, which has always been harsh. These polls have been horrible to Trump. Now show him ahead, in some cases by double digits. Zelensky's not dumb. He's shown an ability to navigate the political process for a guy who's relatively new to the space. How is he looking at this, knowing his country was used as an operation center for the entire Russia hoax intelligence hit on Trump? You think he's saying, I'm going to have to come clean sooner or later because this guy's going to be back in office soon? Or is he just ignoring it, pretending it's going to go away?
I don't know that Zelensky is legally allowed to have brain waves connect from his limbic system to his frontal lobe without getting the express permission of five different layers of the U.S. State Department. So I'm not sure that thinking is really something that he has the liberty to do. And in fact, I think if he starts to exercise independent thought, that will start the successor, that will be mentioned in cables about, he didn't text us before he went to the bathroom at 5 a.m. for permission. He might be having independent thoughts. Even U.S. citizens are told.
Mike, I hate to interrupt you, but you just said something. I'm sorry, but I know the audience is thinking the same thing, too. That memo you just put up before really shocked me. If Zelensky were to speak out, I hope the audience forgives me. They hate when I interrupt the guests, and I totally understand. But if that were to get out and Zelensky were to tell the truth, yes, my government was knee deep in this Russia collusion hoax. Matter of fact, it started here. Will a memo like that come out again? Like, hey, Zelensky, there may be some civil unrest. You think, is that where you're kind of alluding to?
Well, they would need these State Department funded NGO swarms and Soros orgs to even really amplify a media message around that. But I mean, look, Gaddafi was very loud, in the run up to his assassination and before, NATO took him out and he was sodomized on live TV, essentially by, spears of, NATO funded proxy groups. I mean, he was flaming hot in UN speeches. And in public speeches about, some of the backdoor dealings that he had with the U.S. government over the years. Noriega, the same way. It would not be new ground for a U.S.-backed, a dictator or a U.S.-partnered president where the relations sour to start to sort of spill dirt on the nasty things that they were set up to do. The issue is that someone who, say, was working for the FBI as an informant, getting indicted by the Justice Department this is what just happened with this FBI informant, here on the Hunter case. He can that guy can squeal all he wants about how he was set up by the FBI to actually talk to these Russians, but the plain fact is he's still going to be staring at prison bars for the rest of his life, and the only chance for mercy being for him to not spill all the beans. That is, for Zelensky to be ousted from government might not be the worst situation for Zelensky. That might be a golden parachute situation he'd be perfectly happy with to escape with his life intact for not, you know, double crossing or spilling state secrets about the Russiagate affair. So, you know, he's between a rock and a hard place. And I would not be surprised if, you know, whenever he starts to have an independent thought, he turns to some, again, this is just, I'm saying this has to be comedic, but he turns to it, to a substance rather than to a substantive thought.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a question that's been on my mind. I totally understand where you're coming from. The perspective there seems accurate given your knowledge about this, but I don't know how that's a viable strategy. If, say, we even get a 51-49 lead in the Senate, we hand Trump a majority Republican Senate, and even a 4 or 5 seat bumper in the House, he is going to have to come back to Republicans who've become largely skeptical and have become more of a realpolitik party on this stuff. He's going to need money and support. Without the United States, there's no way a country of that many people can possibly keep this war going with Russia. They just can't. And I just wonder at what point he says, listen, I've got to do something to make amends. I mean, we saw what happened last time Trump tried to get the truth about our operation in Ukraine. They impeached him over it with a whistleblower, air quotes, who had been meeting with the lady who was running ANTAC, which was a Soros-aligned group in Ukraine. I mean, I could go on and on all day, as you know, about all these connections. But let me get to some other things here, because you've been very generous with your time. And I can tell by 111,000 people, they're loving this whole interview. You've been amazing. But one quick update, North Carolina just started creeping in some of the votes there. Looks like Trump and Haley, we only got 2,000 votes in, running neck and neck. Vermont, a little bit tight right now for Haley. Haley just went ahead of Trump in Vermont. How many got in? Oh, it's 10%. It's probably, Vermont has a couple of basically city areas. So we'll see what happens with Vermont. I'll keep my eyes on that. And not really city areas. I'm going to get to New York City, but you got the population centers, I should say. But the rural parts of Vermont will probably pull ahead pretty heavily for Trump. It depends where those votes are coming from. I learned that in my primary. Violence. I hate to bring this topic up because I roundly condemn it. Once we turn into a country where we're shooting each other on the corner, it's not a country. It's an old school, you know, WWE match. This time it's real. And we don't want that. However, the left we know is violent. We've seen it. Antifa and BLM. And Mike, you could probably talk about this at length, but the left has always used shock troops in the street. It insulates their own people from, it basically creates a safe space for them while threatening and creating a danger spot for other people who might think about getting out in the streets. So my fear is this: Trump wins in November, it looks likely at this point, and you have another group like this Transition Integrity Project out there, and Guy's got it up on the screen now, where they were talking about an actual street fight, Mike. And they said, this is their words, by the way, it's on the screen, folks, in case you think we're making this up. This may well be a street fight. This was a swampy group, Republicans and Democrats. They may not be kidding. They may be looking for a street fight again during a transition if Trump wins. Does that worry you?
Tremendously. I mean, we see the exact same networks activating again now. And I just posted again to the top of my Twitter timeline at Mike Ben Cyber, some of the other highlights from that Transition Integrity Project document. You know, if the producer can pull up one, it's a 12 minute video that I did on this topic with all of the citations like meticulously laid out. And there's one, it says timestamp 3:30 to 6, Transition Integrity Project in June 2020 planning to use Black Lives Matter street muscle to take to the streets on Biden's behalf if need be to shut down a quote clear Trump win electoral scenario. And I highlighted the specific terms from that document from the Transition Integrity Project, which was run by Rosa Brooks, who was a high-ranking Pentagon official for the Obama administration. And in her own book, which I read, she confessed to having a CIA blue badge, you know, to access the inner sanctum of the CIA. So again, you have the Pentagon, CIA, and then you had just a hodgepodge of State Department intelligence military officials, as well as folks from this whole society cluster spanning journalism and industry and government. And this was their formal plan, role played by John Podesta himself. John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, role played because they did this basically war game. What if Trump wins and we need to stop him from taking office, even if he wins the Electoral College? Now, John Podesta did not get rolled up in a RICO charge over this, like they, like, you know, they did to Jeff Clark and Rudy Giuliani and Trump in the Georgia case. Instead, he got promoted to running a $370 billion slush fund for the White House, and he's now the new climate envoy.
That's right. But he's got it up on the screen right now. And he was one of the crazies in the simulation, Mike Podesta, who talked about California seceding, seceding from the union, seceding from if Donald Trump won. This is nuts.
Yes, and if you pull that up, if the producer can pull this up, just because, you know, seeing it with your own eyes is a very powerful thing. I mean, you can hear me say it, but when you see them in the running again, this is, it says timestamp 3:30 to 6, and here in the direct phrase is a this is in scenario three, that is. You know, because two of the scenarios were like, what if Trump loses but he doesn't leave office? And you're like, okay, well, you know, maybe some CIA-backed proxy paramilitary force, someone doesn't leave office. I mean, that's a scandal, but I don't know. It's a weird situation. That, you know, another one was, you know, Trump, you know, it's too close to tell. And the third scenario was a clear electoral victory for Trump. And here's what they called for: a show of numbers in the streets. Again, this is the U.S. military and CIA shadow, you know, officials from the Obama administration. You know, many of whom have rotated directly back into the Biden government, such as John Podesta. A show of numbers in the streets and actions in the streets may be decisive factors in determining what the public perceives as a just and legitimate cause. And then it says, as a practical matter, participants in the exercise know that racial justice activists and others may act independently of the Biden campaign. We did not robustly test their likely receptivity to a Biden call to take to the streets or the Biden's campaign to control these actors once mobilized. And so if anything, the scale of these demonstrations has increased the stakes for the Democratic Party to, quote, build strong ties with these grassroots organizations and be responsive to the movement's demands. This is between June and November. This is John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, and the CIA Pentagon nexus, saying that the Biden campaign has to pump up and build up these Black Lives Matter street militias in order to make sure they return the favor to shut down the country in case Trump wins the Electoral College.
Mike.
This is a friggin' RICO case.
Yeah, I mean, it is. How do you stop it? I mean, I know knowledge is power. I get it. And, you know, the best way we can combat this stuff is to use kind of that old, what is it, the British debating method. And what my opponent here is about to say, and then he doesn't say it. So if we expose it in advance and spread it out, I mean, we've got a huge audience here. You've got a big social audience. Do you think it makes a difference, or is there any recommendations you have for people out there and what they can do to stop this stuff? I mean, it really is frightening that if Trump wins, you can almost anticipate, you know, street chaos, and they're not even shy about discussing it in advance.
That's exactly right. You know, and I do think that in beforeing something absolutely, you know, counts. You know, it's sort of like that, you know, like you described. I think of it as, you know, that scene from 8 Mile where Eminem says, "I know everything you're going to say about me." And just, you know, sort of, you know.
And that, he wins the rap off. He drops the mic and walks away. That's right.
And they know, the other side knows the importance of this, because the censorship industry has moved very heavily into this concept of pre-bunking, which is the idea of psychologically debunking something before it has gone viral.
That was my next question. I swear, pre-bunking. Uh-huh. Go ahead. I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah, go ahead on that.
So, you know, and, you know, now they have a very twisted science of censorship way of doing this, where, you know, it's basically weapons grade psychology manipulation around exposing somebody to a weakened version of an argument in the same way that a vaccine works, you know, that you give somebody a totally straw man version of the argument, and then you psychologically pound them with talking points about how this only partial aspect of the argument is wrong. And then you give them the next part of the argument, and you psychologically pound them with talking points about that. And now they've sort of constructed this Frankensteinian monster around what this idea is, so that when they see it in the wild, they have an immune system built up to reject it automatically. That's what they mean by pre-bunking. But in this case, you know, there are ways to sort of try to get a few steps ahead. And, you know, the biggest tell of them all are Soros prosecutors. You know, the fact is that the reason that these rent-a-riots are able to, you know, orchestrate this kind of domestic color revolution type activity, where you can shut down the executive function of the government by having the unions walk out, by having, anarcho-tyranny mobs shutting down the ability to hold public speeches for one candidate, whatnot, is because they are protected by prosecutors. I mean, make no mistake, you know, if they were to, quote, do this in a small town, you know, to quote the song, they could be rolled up quite easily. But these are being done in big cities with Soros prosecutors. They're being done in Seattle and Portland and D.C. and whatnot. And there have been actions, actually, to try to remove these Soros prosecutors from, you know, red states with deep blue cities where this is done. So I think, for example, in St. Louis, I think the state of Missouri, took action against the Soros prosecutor there. And in St. Louis, I think a similar thing was done in Texas, and I believe it was done in Florida as well. Being able to control the prosecutors is a lesson that Republicans are going to have to learn the hard way, because we're in a completely new era now. You know, democracy as we classically knew it is no longer here in America. They have redefined democracy from meaning a consensus of individuals to a consensus of institutions. And if you, the voters, go against the consensus of institutions, you are now committing an attack on democracy, and you are, you know, doing what unleashes the intelligence community internationally, which is neutralizing threats to democracy. You are now that threat, you know, that they see needs to be neutralized. And you know, the game has changed. You know, whereas elections used to be won by winning in the polls and winning in the press, now, because the populists are winning in the polls and winning in the press, they've turned to this third category, which previously was only, you know, relegated to Eastern Europe, and that is winning by prosecutors. And, you know, so they're winning by prosecutors by rolling up not just Trump, but basically bankrupting everyone around him with the mountain of legal bills. That was actually one of the biggest sources of damage from Russiagate, was people having to sell their homes just for working in the White House, because they had to defend themselves with high paid lawyers to stop going to jail for 30 years. But, you know, the other side of offensive prosecutions is defensive protection for your own criminal gangs.
That's what I want to ask you about, Mike. You know, on my radio show and on the podcast, I'm fascinated. I think it's my psychology background. I'm always fascinated by big picture politics. But you just really nailed something on a practical end about the Soros prosecutors. Just quick update in Vermont. Looks like 49-46, 14% of the vote in. Donald Trump, Nikki Haley. Vermont, for me, is a clear indicator. If Nikki Haley doesn't win Vermont, it's gone, done. Forget it, finished. She's already lost Virginia in a rout. North Carolina, 55-40, a small percentage of the vote in there. It's really not much at this point. But I have this Walking Dead theory about the communist socialist street agitator class, where there's this episode in The Walking Dead where they go in the prison. They escape from the zombies. It's an abandoned prison. And I like to think of liberals and their street chaos that way, that the way to get people to forfeit their civil liberties and walk into a prison voluntarily is to frighten them so much about the chaos outside that they crave the certainty of a prison. But yeah, that's nice and cute, and it's probably right, but you just said something really practical. Yeah, but the other reason is they want to be able to beat the shit out of conservatives in the street and have a prosecutor not prosecute them and then prosecute the conservative for not taking enough of a beating. It's an absolutely ideal way to create an environment of street intimidation where your political opponents don't dare speak out.
Yeah. And there's a third one, too, which is even nastier, which is them getting paid. Right. So not only have these groups that should have been facing 10 years in prison for, you know, serious felony assault not been prosecuted, but they've all received, you know, in city after city, I think in three different cities, you had multi-million dollar payouts to these groups. For the, you know, police crackdown on them, you know, so they basically got paid, you know, as part of the rent riot that way. But then it gets even nastier, because now you start getting at the NGO institutions and at the union institutions who organized these riots. And you know, that's where, you know, the sort of mercenary aspect of this, you know, these are, you know, primarily young people or dysfunctional people or people with mental health issues, you know, there's a lot of overlap between the Antifa world and a lot of the sort of transgender world and a lot of the sort of super radical, you know, politics with folks not necessarily having a lot of disposable assets and needing to basically draw salaries from strange places. The fact is one of the craziest data points that came out of that. Do you remember this Time magazine article that Molly, came out a couple weeks
Molly ago. Ball? Molly Ball?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We love all the about the cabal. We love that article. It's like these idiots went and bragged about the, they even used the word the cabal to take out Donald Trump. We use that article all the time.
Yeah, well, there's some hidden gems in there that have not been sufficiently popularized that I've been trying to scream about for 2 years now, and I'm glad that we have this sort of platform to talk about it. But there's a little line in there where they refer to a formal agreement between the AFL-CIO and the Chamber of Commerce to stand down from the AFL-CIO organized shutdown DC protests in case Trump won, just days, you know, when the press declared Biden the victor. Now, just a few things to back up. I mentioned at the start of this a group called the National Endowment for Democracy, which is the CIA's top preferred cutout. And this is not even my language. The Washington Post described the National Endowment for Democracy as a CIA cutout in the 1990s when they talked about how, Boris Yeltsin faxed the National Endowment for Democracy for permission to bomb his own parliament building in Russia in 1993. That's how captured the Russian government was in the 90s by our CIA. But essentially, you know, I mentioned the structure of the National Endowment for Democracy. And up top, I mentioned the two political sides of the NED. The first one being the IRI, the International Republican Institute, the sort of CIA wing of GOP. The second one, the National Democratic Institute, the DNC side of the CIA. But then there's two other branches that comprise the sort of four quadrants of NED. One of them is called the Solidarity Center, which is the CIA's work with unions. That is, and in particular, the AFL-CIO, which is the largest union and has acted as a battering ram for rent a riot street muscle for the CIA for 67 years. Actually, right after I talked to you, Dan, I'm having a subscriber stream on Twitter where we are literally going through a CIA documentary about the CIA's role in the AFL-CIO. So that's the third wing, is the CIA's work with the unions. And the fourth wing is something called the Center for International Private Enterprise, which is the Chamber of Commerce wing of the National Endowment for Democracy. So think about that. The top cutout for the CIA has four structures. You know, one of them is the John McCain, you know, never Trump, you know, wing. The second one is literally the Hunter Biden one. The third one is the AFL-CIO one, who was the plan to shut down the country with its 2 million strong union muscle being unleashed on every, you know, street corner in every major city in the country. And the fourth one being the Chamber of Commerce, which is the management class that you know, that pays the labor. Now, at the same time, the Chamber of Commerce companies had paid tens of billions of dollars. Do you remember how much money strangely went to these Black Lives Matter, you know, activist groups and these sort of anti-fascist?
Yeah.
It was like something like $60 billion when you aggregated across the Fortune 500, which is the Chamber of Commerce. So you had, you know, all four webs of the CIA's top cutout involved in the formally planned destabilization of the country in case they couldn't, you know, in case the election was declared the other way on the Electoral College side.
Folks, you need to read that piece. This Molly Gee, can you put it up on the screen? If you have not read this piece Mike is talking about, you have got to read it. Molly Ball, The Secret History of the Shadow Campaign That Saved the 2020 Election. Mike, I'm a little short on time, but I just wanted to kind of wrap up on a couple of things. This, what you're talking about, and these four enterprises here and their collective cabal effort, their words, not mine, to basically destroy the country if Trump won in 2020. You think they're getting ready to do this again in 2024? That's probably a silly question, but I'd like your take on it.
Let's see. Can you set that ball any higher? I'm not sure that I No, I mean, abso-friggin-lutely. There's no way there's not a snowball's chance in heck that they are not going to unleash this. They need to destabilize the country in order to induce the crises that allow these extraordinary actions, so that they can say, well, the extraordinary steps that we did to take out Trump were the product of a crisis that was necessary to save the country. So first they need to induce that crisis. And, you know, this is the same thing. You know, these are specialists at this. You know, this is like Taken. These people have a very special set of skills.
Right.
The people who are involved in this story, in the blob, are professional overthrowers of governments around the world. And they have been for 80 years. You know, the CIA, it was set up to be able to topple governments that the State Department wants toppled. But it would be a diplomatic incident if it was said that the U.S. government did it. The entire process.
Sorry, guys. North Carolina called folks for Trump. No surprise there. We'll follow that. Obviously, the rest of that we'll give you some. Vermont still 50-46. Trump's still ahead in Vermont. But I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead. I'm just trying to give them some of these results here.
No, that's exactly right. And what's really concerning me is, you know, I deeply suspect that the money that the Chamber of Commerce paid to these union-backed or BLM-backed or Antifa-backed groups, you know, went into essentially, you know, this kind of mercenary rioting behavior. And I am very concerned about that coming out of taxpayer funds in this cycle. You have, you know, Biden's establishment of this new climate corps. Well, you know how many adjacencies there are to the climate protester movement, Antifa? You know, the whole Sunrise Zoom calls that were formerly censored by the Department of Homeland Security, which I busted in a scandal on foundationforfreedomonline.com when we broke the DHS censorship web open in 2022, we caught the Department of Homeland Security formally getting all the social media companies to ban any narrative that talked about these Antifa, you know, Sunrise Movement Zoom calls. The Sunrise Movement was this sort of Antifa eco-terrorist type activity that had joined up with BLM. And, you know, now you have these groups being juiced with billions of dollars of taxpayer money.
And who's that's why they love these funds.
Who's running that slush fund? John Podesta, the guy who ran the simulation
California secession in 2020. Guy in the TIP. Mike, last question, I'll let you go. I got to get my crew. We got an early morning show again tomorrow. But this has been fascinating. I thought we'd go 45 minutes. Guy's like, there's no way. I know you're going to talk to Mike forever. But last question here. Does Donald Trump, if he gets in office, and now that he's got a decent kind of background about what the swamp looks like and what closets to open and where to go, if he were to engage in a mass purge of people not aligned with the Constitution but more aligned with their personal politics, do you think he has enough time in 4 years to be able to at least bring that freedom train somewhat close back to the station instead of where it is now, which is headed off to the old school Soviet Union?
Gosh, yeah, it's a hard question to answer because it's unclear how much dry powder the blob has, you know, or will have at the end of, you know, the 2024 election cycle. It's hard enough to see through the fog of war for the next 3-4 months. With, you know, 91 in process felony charges, you know, the ever escalating attempts to bankrupt, because this is the other thing they're doing now, is even if they can't have him in jail, you know, if he's literally bankrupt with a $500 million, you know, judgment that just came down, another $100 million in a defamation case, you know, who knows, you know, how many more of those will be done. You know, it's very hard for me to make that prediction. You know, there is going to be a question, I think, of whether a sufficient portion of the blob can essentially be converted into embracing some aspect of domestic populism. I think if that can be done, if a certain value can be propositioned for a certain critical mass of the blob to be swayed over to populism or to Trumpism, I think that would be possible. But you know, it depends on how much they raise the stakes from here. You know, when I was sitting in the White House and Russiagate was happening, I thought, okay, this is going to be a pressure tactic, but they're never going to throw him in jail, you know. And now, but they broke 2.5 centuries of precedent to, you know, to do that same thing, you know, with these civil cases. You know, when we knew that, you know, this case around the $500 million, you know, that it was a BS case, but, you know, did you think that they were going to do $500 million of damages for something that had no damages to the other side? All the banks were paid back, you know, and had no victim, you know, and so. Yeah, part of that, I think, is going to depend on what plays out in Ukraine right now and what plays out in Iran, what plays out in Israel, what plays out in Saudi Arabia. You know, whether or not the blob might concede the futility of certain Biden-era policies or might be hedging in the meantime to reinvest assets in a certain direction so that they're not quite as threatened by Trumpism, you know, is going to, I think, dictate that. And that there's some randomness and random chance to that story in terms of, you know, I mean, just what was it last week? This call came out with the, you know, Germany, basically this, you know, a NATO State Department proxy plotting to you know, bomb the bridge into Crimea, and then that being foiled. You never know how this is going to escalate. And if territory continues to fall in Ukraine, that will, I think, necessitate in the eyes of the State Department a detente, at least at the Pentagon level. The CIA's work will continue in trying to recapture territory regardless of whatever deal is struck. But if there's too many open juggling balls, I think. That's the North Star.
I'm asking you a complicated question, and I totally understand, but I appreciate your candor on it. Mike, where can people find you on social media? How can they grab more of your content? You're an important voice. I need them to hear you. Please feel free to plug away.
So the best platform to find me on is Twitter, you know, X, at Mike Ben Cyber. I post probably about 30 times a day. I do videos multiple times a week for subscribers. I have a subscriber stream right after this where we're going to watch documentary movies about CIA history, and I sort of live annotate it and its relevance today. So that all happens on X, whether general audience or my sort of $5 a month subscriber thing. I have a foundation website, foundationforfreedomonline.com. We publish blockbuster investigative reports on the censorship industry and that the whole of society effort around censorship of the internet. So we break that open there. And then I also have a Rumble channel. It's Mike Ben Cyber as well, where I post archives of a lot of the videos that
We're happy to have you on Rumble, Mike. It's my contribution to the free speech ecosystem too. So,
amazing. And
Mike,
thank you for doing that.
Yeah. Yo, hey, listen, man, it was Chris Pavlovsky, the CEO over there, is an incredible guy who absolutely believes in this. When foreign governments told him, hey, you got to censor these folks, he said, I'm going to flip you the double barrel middle finger, and we're just not going to broadcast in your country. How about those potatoes? Mike, thanks a lot. I hope we can do this again sometime.
Would love to. Thanks so much. Thanks for all the great work.
You got it. Mike Benz, folks. Quick update before we rock and roll. These guys been at it all day. Thank you to Tony and Guy and my production team and Joe and everyone I really appreciate it. It's been a long day. But I enjoy it, folks. Vermont, still tight. Trump's ahead, 51-45, roughly about 20% of the vote in. Again, Vermont is, we got to see what happens. If Nikki Haley doesn't win Vermont, I mean, she really doesn't have a case regardless. Looks like Virginia was called. That should have been a state. If Nikki Haley's going to make a case, it would have been in Virginia. Northern Virginia, a lot of government workers. Yeah, I mean, it was just, as Guy just said, it's a total annihilation in Virginia. 66-32. I'm sure someone will go, oh, but she got 30% of the vote. Yeah, that's 30 points less than the 60-plus Donald Trump got. You got to win. You can't keep saying I only lost by 30, okay? North Carolina already called. We'll be up late tonight. We'll be watching this. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Asa Hutchinson got 71 votes. Wait, I keep that up. Dude, folks, the Asa Hutchinson team is celebrating. They got 71 votes in the North Carolina. Everybody's applauding Asa, President Hutchinson. I think I got more votes in the North Carolina primary when I ran. But Dan, you never ran. Exactly. That's my point. And thank you to the 100,000 plus people who tuned in tonight. I got to tell you, folks, I didn't think we'd get that kind of a turnout. I run a morning show, but man, six figures, that's a lot, especially when cable news and everyone else are lobbying for your attention. I'm really honored. I really appreciate it. Thanks to the team for staying with me late. See you guys tomorrow at 11 a.m. We'll have all this coverage, California, Texas, all of it. I hope you enjoyed that. I know I did. My gosh, that guy was a wealth of information. See you back here at 11 a.m. tomorrow, rumble.com/Bongino. Thanks a lot. Yeah. Let's take a look at Texas before we go. Yeah. How's what's it look like? We got some numbers in there? What do you got? They knew? Oh, wow. Look, Texas. That's a pretty heavy number. 73-21. If Nikki Haley did anything over, say, 28-29%, Texas, I'd be stunned. Yeah, Texas. You got to call it Texas. Texas. And Tennessee's going to be another blowout, too. It's going to be a bad night for Nikki Haley, folks. And I keep your eye on those uncommitted votes on the Biden side, too. All right. Now we're really going to wrap it up. See you back here tomorrow, 11 a.m. Thanks for everything, guys. You're the best. Best audience in the business. Take care.
You just heard the Dan Bongino Show.